Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. A rollicking exploration of misunderstandings and misplaced love, mischief and musings. Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream comes to Vermilion as part of the South Dakota Shakespeare Festival. Chaya Gordon-Bland is Managing Artistic Director, and she joins us now from SDPB's Vermilion Studio. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, Lori.
Also with us, Madeline Sayet. She's stage director. She has been named to Forbes 30 Under 30 in Hollywood and Entertainment for her work as a stage director. She's a TED Fellow, an MIT Media Lab Director's Fellow, and a recipient of the National Director's Fellowship, and she is with us in Vermilion as well. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Chaya, let's start with you and tell us a little bit about the Shakespeare Festival itself so people have an idea of how they can participate, and then we'll get into the Midsummer Night's Dream.
Great. Thanks, Lori. Yes, the South Dakota Shakespeare Festival has been in operation since 2012. We do free professional Shakespeare productions in Vermilion's Prentice Park every June. We do a four-day run of productions, and then we also do a wide array of education outreach programming surrounding the production.
And do you pick, are you picking the production itself, or you? How did you meet Madeline and bring her into this conversation is what I'm wondering.
Oh, that's a great question and a little bit of a story, so I'll keep it somewhat concise. But Madeline and I actually became acquainted through an organization known as STA, the Shakespeare Theater Association. STA is an international arts advocacy organization for leaders of Shakespeare companies. So it caters towards board directors, artistic directors, managing directors, education directors, people who are running Shakespeare companies. And it's a network for getting people together. The main event is a conference that happens every year, hosted by rotating theaters, and it gets people together for a conference really to network, to share best practices, and to have conversations about what's happening in Shakespeare leadership at the time. So Maddie and I met at one of these conferences, I believe 5 years mm-hmm. ago,
yeah.
and started having some conversations about the work that we're doing and work that we might be interested in doing, and those conversations continued and led us to apply for a National Endowment for the Arts grant about 2 years ago now to fund this particular project, which specifically focuses on mindfully and intentionally integrating Native artists and perspectives into the Shakespeare production process. And really, the proposal would not have happened without having Madeline on board because of her particular background, skills, and expertise.
Mm. Madeline, tell me a little bit about your first experience with Shakespeare and how it kind of flowed through and crisscrossed with your Mohegan traditional heritage.
Sure. So when I was a very small child, like 6 or 7, my mom at the time started taking me to see outdoor Shakespeare productions in Connecticut on the traditional homelands of my people. And over time, that meant that because I started seeing the Shakespeare productions as such a small child, they really intersected with all of the traditional Mohegan stories I heard growing up, and I didn't really see them as separate. I saw a lot of parallels between different archetypes and different sort of ways of thinking within the pieces at that time. And so as I grew up did more and more Shakespeare, it sort of naturally at some point transitioned into really thinking about how we can incorporate more Native artists in Shakespeare, but not necessarily in a prescribed way. Because people would say to me sometimes, oh, you're casting like Native folks in Shakespeare, how innovative. And I'd be like, why would I imagine a world where we didn't belong? It would be very strange to me. And so in the case of this production, it's really nice because a lot of different Native theater artists who I've worked with on various projects from many different nations have come together. And in that coming together, there's also a nice continuance and dialogue about the Native theater projects that are happening nationally, as well as Shakespeare projects. So there's a little bit of an intersection there.
Madeline, talk a little bit about the importance of seeing yourself on stage, of seeing people on stage. Why does it matter?
So when I was growing up, I remember very specifically that the only depictions of Native people I saw on stage were always red face. And I remember being very confused and baffled by why our culture was being treated in such a disrespectful way. And coming to my mom and really not understanding why the theater, which was something that I thought was supposed to be a powerful tool for telling stories, was doing something so hurtful and you know, violent against our people. And over time, it's been really exciting to watch that shift, to be able to watch, spaces that are being created where kids can see themselves and see themselves as a part of the world. Because it's really hard to imagine yourself a part of a world that you're not in, or that you're in a very limited capacity. For a long time, the trend was to, you know, include Native people in very limited capacity. They could only be in a play if they were providing cultural expertise, if they were in their traditional regalia, if they were, it wasn't that they were just allowed to be part of the world. And so I think that being able to see yourself on stage, but also being able to see yourself on stage as capable of anything, is a really powerful tool in imagining the possibilities of the future. Mm.
The professional limitations of those limited roles probably can't be understated. So now you can also put on your, you know, on your theater resume, you know, Titania, or that makes a huge difference versus being, you know, Indian princess number two.
Yeah, it's it's a big deal also because those all actors actually grow up aware of a lot of those iconic roles, and also people see that on a resume and they know. They know who those characters are. They're able to start a conversation about that, and that's very different than only ever being able to be cast because there's sort of a very specific limited requirement. And oftentimes, until recently, those Native characters, right, exactly like something like as stereotypical as Indian Princess Number Two, weren't even being written by Native writers. Right. So you were not only being forced to be limited to playing Native roles, but to be playing Native roles that didn't even accurately depict any part of Native identity.
Right. My daughter played Puck in a production of this, and when she was done, she cried because she was so grateful that she got, you know, that last those last lines. And when she turned and walked off the stage, she had a deep sense of gratitude that she was able to play it. So talk a little bit about gender in Shakespeare as well, and this is a play that. That plays with gender as well.
Yeah. So traditionally in my work, I've done a lot, I would say actually a lot more playing with gender than I necessarily am specifically in this piece. But one of the things I really love about when gender roles are played with, and when, you know, something happens like, you know, your daughter being able to play Puck, is we're given freedom in the text that a lot of the gender-specific characters aren't ascribed. So if suddenly you're playing a role, so when I was growing up, I was initially sort of confined to sort of the Juliets of the canon. And while there are really delightful things about those roles, things usually don't end very well for them. They don't have a lot of freedom. Right. And so then suddenly when you're able to play the fool, when you're able to play a mischievous fairy, when you're able to play someone like Puck, In enacting a role that has that kind of expansiveness, you then find ways that expansiveness lives inside yourself, and it's so liberating to be able to play a character that can do anything. And so, in Midsummer Night's Dream, the play itself plays a little bit with gender, but for the most part, there's not a ton of gender shifting going on so much as there are characters that, all of Shakespeare's plays were written for an all-male company. And so there's gender fluidity naturally within all of the pieces.
Let's talk a little bit, Chaya, about Shakespeare in South Dakota and in Shakespeare across the country, and how important is it to stage these productions. This is one that maybe a lot of people would recognize, at least would recognize elements of it and scenes from it. Why root that here? How does it fit in South Dakota?
Great, thanks. Yeah, I'm actually not from South Dakota. I moved here 9 years ago, and as sort of a Shakespeare geek who'd been doing a lot of Shakespeare originally as an actor and then more recently, you know, as a teaching artist and at that time a young director. And so I had a lot of passion for the world of Shakespeare and had seen a lot, and again, this was part of the STAW, Shakespeare Theatre Association connection as well, about all of the amazing things that can happen with and in conversation with Shakespeare. So in addition to sort of putting a play on the stage, the texts and the emotional lives and the words and characters and themes of Shakespeare's plays really do resonate with all different kinds of people all over the world and over the course of long periods of time. And in arriving in South Dakota, I really saw that as an opportunity to be able to build that here and offer that here. So a team of collaborators co-founded the company in 2011, really with the idea to share something very magical and inspiring and exciting with our South Dakota communities. And the company has really evolved into an organization whose mission is to engage and connect and inspire our communities and to explore those shared human experiences through Shakespeare in ways that are intentionally inclusive and inviting and open.
Let's talk a little bit, Madeline, about building that world and how do you approach, you know, a text like this, you know, even thinking of my daughter's costume for Puck, you know, you're beginning, this is a genderless character. Well, what's the makeup? What's the hair? It could be anything. And starting from scratch at that point, do you start from scratch when you stage something like this and say, there's certain elements that could be anything? Talk about world building.
Yeah, so I usually try and start a process with a question, a question that brings people together, because I'm very lucky in that as a director, I always have, you know, a varying size, but always a pretty supportive team of people who are imagining that world together. And so in the case of this play, at this moment, the question I was interested in was, how do we see beyond what we expect? And because I think that, you know, A Midsummer Night's Dream, I think the thing that most people really love about it is that it all happens in the woods in the night, and there's fairies, there's spirits that play mischievous tricks on people, and then in the morning everyone wonders, you know, what exactly happened? Did we really see that? Was that real? And so in building this world together, the design team has really done an incredible job of thinking about how these things can come from Prentice Park, where the play is being set, where the Shakespeare performances are always performed, but how the show can feel like a world that emerges naturally from the park that makes you think about, oh, could this happen any day in the park at night, as opposed to a faraway place.
Chaya, tell me about your relationship with Shakespeare, some of the early experiences that you had. What brought you here?
Yeah. I mean, I cut my teeth as an actor, which a lot of theater artists do. So I had a long stint as a freelance actor of working with various Shakespeare companies. My first real exciting gig was what is now known as the American Shakespeare Center and was formerly Shenandoah Shakespeare, where you're literally like jumping in a van and crashing on couches and bringing Shakespeare to schools and communities all over the country. And from that, it sort of launched me into a stint of doing various Shakespeare plays. I actually also got to play Puck in New York with Inwood Shakespeare Festival in a park in the woods, which was probably my favorite theater experience to date. And then as I shifted into graduate school, I also studied First Folio, which is a particular, without going on and on about that, a lot of people will know what that is, but it's sort of a particular source text of Shakespeare's work that we believe is closest to how he wrote the plays and has a lot of really wonderful clues in it for actors. So my graduate work actually focused in on, my graduate thesis project was teaching a class of Shakespeare First Folio techniques and an accompaniment production of Cymbeline using a First Folio text. And that was my first full Shakespeare production that I directed. I also did the fights because I also was cutting my teeth in stage combat. And that sort of launched me into both directing and academia, which my work now, I do a lot of other things. I do movement and stage combat, but there's definitely a focus in my work on Shakespeare and classical styles. And I love it. And I love seeing how it illuminates students and it illuminates actors and it illuminates audiences and all of the amazing ways that Shakespeare is being used around the world to transform and uplift communities.
We were looking as a team at some of your resume skills in stage fighting and weaponry. And we decided that you are not a person to be trifled with when it comes to your skills.
Yes, I'm very good at fake fighting. If it's choreographed, then don't mess with me.
And let's. I want to make sure we have time here to talk about some of the events and how people can and join them. We could all geek out about Shakespeare for a long time, I think, with a trio of nerds here. But and Madeline, I want to just specifically ask you about language, because when people think about Shakespeare, often they think about the language and the preservation of that language, and that has to connect to the preservation of indigenous language. Mm-hmm. For you, that's a huge conversation here in South Dakota with preserving Lakota language, for example. Mm-hmm. Do you see a connection there? Is that important to you?
I do, and I also think historically it's become a tool more and more often for spreading awareness of preservation of indigenous languages. The very first production I ever directed was a production of The Tempest that centered on the question, what would happen if Caliban could get his language back? Mm-hmm. And so the journey to freedom over the course of that piece was very much in line with language repatriation. There's also been a series of, we're very lucky that both the actors playing Helena and Demetrius in this piece were also part of a Tlingit language project, Midsummer Night's Dream. Actually, it featured several Alaska native languages in Fairbanks a few years ago. But there's been a real move to translating Shakespeare into indigenous languages, I think to remind people that our languages are just as important. That this isn't the only language, and that in poetry there's actually a lot of freedom for those nuances to exist, since things don't translate literally between languages. Mm. And I know that it's a hope of Haya's that at some point there be some of the languages from here in the production. We ended up not incorporating it into this one just because there weren't we have lots of native performers in the production, but none where it organically made sense for them. They're not from here, so it didn't make sense for that to be a part of this production, but it's truly a hope, I think, that that there are more bridges developing between the languages of the place that we're in and the Shakespeare Festival.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
The South Dakota Shakespeare Festival presents A Midsummer Night's Dream. That is June 6th through 9th in Vermilion's Prentice Park. You can find more at sdshakespearefestival.org. There's audience talk back on Sunday, June 9th, following the matinee. That's free. You get a Q&A with the cast and crew. What else, Haya? Did I miss anything that you want to make sure to direct people
to? Sure. Yeah, it would just be great to also point out that Thursday? Is that tomorrow? Wow.
Oh, wow.
The opening day of the festival. We also have a full day of theater arts workshops for youth happening at the Vermilion Public Library. Those will start at 10 a.m. and end at 3:30 p.m. And those will feature actors from the company as teaching artists, teaching workshops for ages 8 through 12 and 13 through 18. The workshops are free. Advanced registration is recommended, although we're kind of late in the game, and my guess is we still will have space for people if people want to show up and participate. Mm-hmm. Also, on Saturday afternoon in the park at 3 p.m., we will be having a special event. It's the Scholars in Conversation event hosted by USD's College of Arts and Sciences, wherein scholars from around the country will come together and visit with the audience and talk about this particular play as well as our particular production and some of the unique opportunities and interpretations. That would be a great event for people who have already seen the show on Thursday and Friday, or for people preparing to see the show on Saturday and Sunday. So there will be no spoilers, and it's a great conversation to get involved in. Again, that program is also free, or pun intended, all of our programs are free will donation.
All right, find more at sdshakespearefestival.org. You can also look at the Vermilion Public Library website, vermilionpubliclibrary.org. Haya Gordon-Bland, Managing Artistic Director, and Madeline Sayet, Stage Director for this production. Thank you both so much for being here. Haya, thanks.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
Madeline, thank you too.